Welcome to Understory, this fourth day of July in 2018. I'm Elizabeth Poe. Australia has a rich array of unique species, once kept separate from the rest of the world by oceans and sheer distance. But more recent species from overseas, which are kept in check by natural dynamics in their own original natural habitat, have arrived in Australia and found no natural predators to keep their numbers in proportion. In Australia, these species get called weeds or pests. They're out of time and place, that's all. But the effect of this can be devastating to biodiversity, agriculture and habitat. You may be thinking of fire ants. They're a horrible experience, according to human victims. And our cane toad tide was actually intentionally introduced to stop damage being done to cane sugar by two Australian native beetles. You may have heard of the scourge of dieback, but less so about myrtle rust. This week on Understory, we explore these two biosecurity threats, how they impact on us, and what can be done about them. Understory spoke with Cameron Crowe recently, as current chair of the Dieback Working Group in WA, and also executive director of the organisation Leave No Trace. Cameron is very clear about this problem.
Cameron, can I just ask you to start with about Leave No Trace Australia? I haven't heard of that before. What's that about?
It's an education program for minimising impact for people travelling and recreating in natural and cultural heritage areas. It's an international program that's particularly relevant to our part of the world with rapidly increasing tourism. Western Australia hasn't really been exposed to the impact of that so much at the moment, but on the east coast in Tasmania, Cairns, which is the third busiest international airport in Australia, and particularly in New Zealand, so there's a Leave No Trace New Zealand organisation, they are seeing massive increases in tourists, particularly international tourism, so people who aren't aware of the environmental issues or of the cultural, rich cultural heritage of Australia. So it's really important to develop information and communicate information to people before they arrive in Australia, ideally, but then on the ground as well, about issues like biosecurity, fire and wildlife.
So what's the worst sort of things that tourists could do or have been known to do that really shows that this has to be something that needs to be taken up?
Well, one example would be myrtle rust. Once again, in Western Australia, we haven't been very exposed yet to myrtle rust. So myrtle rust is a plant disease that came into Australia about 5 years ago now from South America. The Australian government spent tens of millions of dollars in preparation for an incursion over decades leading up to the plant disease coming into Australia. It's particularly a problem because it's windborne. So unlike another pathogen like Phytophthora dieback, which is a big issue around the wet areas of Australia, myrtle rust can be transported on the wind and on people's clothing. So people go bushwalking, they go from one area to another and it spreads very rapidly. So from its incursion in the north coast of New South Wales, where it was first identified, it has now spread up into the Northern Territory, and because of the prevailing northeast winds, it's expected to be in the Kimberley shortly, and it impacts a massive number of the Australian plants.
What does it do to them?
It's like a canker, so it basically kills them in the end. So not doesn't kill all plants, but it kills a large number of plants, and it will have an accumulative impact on ecosystems.
A bit like the root rotting rascal dieback, particularly the strain Phytophthora cinnamomei, making you scrape and wash your boots and tyres after entering affected bushland around WA, and of which almost half of Australian flora species are susceptible, myrtle rust here would cause a lot of problems. It's a type of plant rust otherwise known as the exotic fungus Ostropuccinia psidii.
And can people see that they're carrying it, or can they see evidence of it, or is it one of those things that's invisible until it takes effect?
No, it's not like Phytophthora. It's clearly evident on plants once the plant gets affected. It's got a yellow pollen-like texture, and so it's clearly visible on clothes and on material when you brush up against it. Yeah, and you know what you're looking for. Wow. So what Leave No Trace, one of the things Leave No Trace does is to develop information about local conditions, and so if it's prevalent in an area, if we had the amount of resources that are required, and unfortunately, you know, investment by government in environmental management over the last couple of decades has decreased by 80%, and so one of the first things that's slashed is environmental education.
Is that in real terms?
So yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it just means that all of us have to become more and more responsible and more knowledgeable about our impacts and take responsibility for it. We definitely can't rely on thinking that the government's responsible or other people are responsible for maintaining our healthy environment. And so when we introduced the Leave No Trace program to Australia, the federal government said they were supported on the basis that we included cultural values as well. And so that's a great addition to the program, and we all have to become custodians for country, just as traditional owners have been custodians and been responsible for looking after their part of the environment or the world for generations.
Overseas, there are known to be several strains of Puccinia psittii. At this stage, Australia has only one strain. That's myrtle rust, which threatens trees and shrubs in the Myrtaceae family of plants, and that includes Australian natives like bottlebrush, tea tree and eucalypts. The species, known in scientific terms as Callistemon, Melaleuca, Eucalyptus, Angophora and Corymbia. The disease can cause deformed leaves, heavy defoliation of branches, reduced fertility, dieback, stunted growth and plant death. It's not known how myrtle rust entered Australia, but it could have been here for more than 2 years before being detected. As Cameron mentioned, myrtle rust spores can be spread easily via contaminated clothing, hair, skin and personal items, infected plant material, equipment, as well as by insect and animal movement and wind dispersal. There are 1,215 species in the Myrtaceae family in Western Australia, all of which could be at risk. One of the issues arising from this biosecurity breach is the possibility of other similar infections getting into Australia and from Australia to nearby countries. Chemical control has been shown to work, but it is limited to small-scale infestations, not the vast bush areas involved.
This crosses over to the Phytophthora, the dieback working group. Would you tell us, just in a few words, I suppose, what's happening with that and what's coming up?
So we've got a national, our annual conference is coming up at the end of July, the DIG conference. So you can see that on our website, which is dwg.org.au. Western Australia is the world leading centre for dieback research. It's got a very, very strong established scientific community that's doing a lot of work in that area that's relevant globally, particularly in Asia, where phytophthora impacts on food crops as well as just natural environments. In New Zealand, the dieback, kauri dieback, is having a massive impact on kauri trees, sacred tree to the Maori people. And places like Auckland, the Auckland City Council is closing off hiking areas, tracks, and things have got so critical to the survival of those species. And the kauri tree is the largest tree species in New Zealand. It was once dominant, but it's been almost milled out of existence since colonial times. But survival of the species is so critical now that managers, land managers, are having to close access to areas until they can get a good understanding of the conditions and the spread, the prevalence of the disease, and how to manage it more effectively.
Dieback and myrtle rust are two significant threats, but action on any specific species threat needs to be in the context of a wider approach to the environment, especially how the community can be engaged. A good fit for focusing community action would be the sort of work typically done by natural resource management groups. NRM approaches bring together the science, the environment, the cultural values and the community networks to ensure action on any one issue is supported and reinforced by important action done elsewhere. We heard briefly from Perth NRM Chief Executive Officer Paul Bodlovich last week on our program about the Southwest Native Title settlements. Paul sees our heritage wrapped up with biosecurity issues like myrtle rust.
So NRM stands for Natural Resource Management, which brings together a sustainable environment, sustainable agriculture, sustainable living, and there's sort of an underpinning thread of traditional Aboriginal ecological knowledge that sort of flows through it all. Kind of what we're doing here today at the Connecting Culture and Country seminar. People fear the unknown, people fear change. They're two things that we have sitting in front of us as a global human society at the moment, you know, to take it to a meta sort of level. We're looking at, you know, the southwest region of WA as a biodiversity hotspot, which sounds like a really great thing, yay, but actually being a biodiversity hotspot is a negative thing because it means that we're on the brink of losing an enormous amount of species of plants and animals. And once a species is gone, they're gone forever. We've got that approaching us, and that's the progression of human habitation in this part of the world, and especially over the past couple of hundred years. And when you put that alongside, the impact of climate change and the effect that that's having, on the coastline, there's well documented sort of maps and things you can go and look at about what's going to happen there in the southwest. You know, at Perth NRM, we're sort of starting to talk about, so what does food security for our little patch of the world look like going forward to 2050? We look at what the species are that are under threat and how they can be protected and, sort of go from there. And all of those things, they're all linked in the traditional knowledge that Aboriginal people hold. Sure, we're bringing governments along, we're bringing all these other organisations, but ultimately it's about bringing the community along. And so, it's an important part for us, again, across all of these things, is how do we do a better job of bringing the community along? And there's an educational aspect of that, and there's an engagement aspect of that, and there's, it's just a whole world of how do we do that? But, you're from RTR, you guys get... You get the benefit and the power and the struggle involved in all of that all at once.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Paul.
No worries. Thanks, Elizabeth.
The likely impacts of myrtle rust in Western Australia, if it arrived here, are unknown. It is possible that it could devastate our Jarrah, Karri, Tuit and Wandoo forests and other native habitats, including species already at high risk. Myrtle rust could also have an economic impact on eucalypt or oil mallee plantations, commercial honey and native flower production, and the garden industry, as well as tourism if natural landscapes are badly damaged. So if you come across what you suspect is myrtle rust, do ring the Pest and Disease Information Service to report the location on free call 1800 084 881. Symptoms can also be reported through the My Pest Guide reporter app or by making an online report. Thank you for being with Understory. I'm Elizabeth Poe, and thanks to Paul Bodlovich from Perth NRM, as well as Cameron Crowe from Leave No Trace Australia and the Dieback Working Group. You can hear this program and others online anytime. Google Understory blog and tune in again. Same time, same planet next week on RTRFM. When there'll be more to explore and understory.